Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hey, folks, welcome to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. This is Kelly Wells. We're talking SmackDown for March the 17th. Happy St. Patrick's Day for those of you that celebrate, whether you are Irish or not. I am, but I really wish I hadn't been driving home at the time that I was driving home. Seems like a lot of folks were on the road that shouldn't have been, but that doesn't matter. We're talking SmackDown. We are on the road to WrestleMania, the hard sell for WrestleMania. Not a lot of wrestling minutes tonight, about 25 minutes of wrestling tonight as we try to make hay while the sun shines. Stories that... It looks like our co-host is silenced, but I guess we'll find out if that is true. But we are going to talk here with Tom Stout and I. We are a package deal, and hopefully Tom is with us. Tom, can you say hey if you're here? He's not, so I'm going to try to bring him on the show. But in the meantime, let's see what we can do. So we're talking. Okay. So the main event that they told us was going to be the main event at the beginning of the show was Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus. This was the last match, but at some point they did kind of announce a match between Sami Zayn and Jey Uso. That match did not happen. This was a storyline to get us where we had to go with the tag team match that I genuinely for a long time have thought would be the main event of night one of WrestleMania. But I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. So it seems internally like they want it to be Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte. And before tonight, I would have said they're just going down the wrong rabbit hole here. Tonight did seem like a step in the right direction if what they want to do is Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley as the main event of the first night of WrestleMania. It would be a much better story, a much more convenient story, if Rhea was the babyface here because she's got a loss to avenge against Charlotte, who largely gets booed no matter which side of the aisle she's on. But I don't know if that's going to be what happens. But that's kind of where we are with the main events of WrestleMania. We got a few things kind of moving in the direction where we thought. We've got no formal announcement of the Battle Royal here. I don't know if we can expect a Battle Royal, but we do have what they are calling a showcase, a men's showcase and a women's showcase. We were not given a lot of information. All we got was we are going to have a tag team match tonight to qualify for that. It was very, very obvious who would get to that. And indeed, Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan got that win. So lots of little things moving in the right direction tonight, but I'm going to try to figure out why I don't have Tom yet online. If he can hear me, he can let me know why. But you can call us at 347-215-8558. Talk to us with the one on your keypad. And if you want to raise your hand, I believe that is one star or star one. It's one of those, folks. So I'm going to throw to Reverend Keith. And in the meantime, I'm going to try to figure out how I can get Tom on this show. So Reverend Keith in Baltimore, if you are here, say hello.
Hello. How are you, Kelly Wells?
I'm not too bad. I just want Tom here. I would feel a lot better if I could get him back on the show. But otherwise, no complaints. I'm certainly glad you're here and that you can hear me. So not all of this is for naught. I'm glad anybody's paying attention at all, because we have a crazy NCAA tournament on tonight, and a 16 beat a 1 tonight. So the fact that anybody would show up for Wrestling Chatter makes me happy.
Hey, who better to talk to than the NXT old band of idiots?
That's who we are. Thank you for remembering.
Yeah, you know, I don't forget anything. And I saw that in Alex McDonald's post. I said, well, let me call it tonight. I can't wait to talk to you guys. And then now we're missing one. So let's hope that in the middle of my chatter that Tom will be able to get online and we all can talk together. But, Kelly, you sound great. I do want to make a correction, though. The Sami Zayn Jey Uso segment was never announced as a match. It was announced as a face-to-face to close the show.
Okay, so that's what they did. I saw the graphic probably as I was doing double duty with the screen showing that Fairleigh Dickinson game where they beat Purdue. That's probably why that happened. But they showed that on the screen. So there you go.
Okay, I want to jump to the. What I felt was the highlight of the night, I don't know about you, the Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley in-ring, which led to a huge pull-apart. And I know you discussed that a few minutes ago, Kelly.
Yes, indeed. So they spent some time. A couple of matches got a very large amount of time tonight, and this was one of them. We, of course, got the moment with Dominic being who he is, being in that match. They even got to be in a match tonight, Dominic and Rhea. They won the opener in 7-11 over Santos Escobar and Zelina Vega. Rhea Ripley, of course, getting the pin with the Riptide on Zelina Vega, which is
right.
My wife was watching with me and did mention how small Zelina Vega is. So there we are. We moved toward that. A lot of screen time for Rhea Ripley, and then Charlotte got some of hers as
they
well.
They went 4 seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This was the first half of the show was only about pushing two different matches.
Rhea and Charlotte and Dominic Mysterio and Rey Mysterio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go to what I thought was the highlight of the night. Now, Dave Meltzer had reported earlier this morning that WWE had announced that Charlotte Rhea would main event night one, okay? Now, prior to this announcement, many of us critics of the WWE and wrestling angles was like, where's the heat? Now, ironically, the same night that, you know, right after this announcement was made, they delivered. I mean, this was great, great, and great. I mean, Rhea basically laid it out. She said the reason why she chose Charlotte Flair as opposed to Bianca Belair was because when she walks through that locker room, all of the ladies look at her or walk away from her out of fear except Charlotte Flair. She said, Charlotte, you are a star. I need to become a star. And in order to become a star, she has to defeat her 2 weeks from tomorrow night. So I thought that was brilliantly put together. The writers, the bookers, the producers, all the way down to the pull apart. I felt bad for the fake security dude. They got one dude got kicked in the head. The other dude got headbutted by Rhea. And that looked brutal. But these ladies brought it. You know, they fought into the crowd. I thought that was, to me, that was the highlight of the night. What are your thoughts on the pull-apart brawl?
I liked that. I also liked the touch of it seems like without trying to be too overt about it, they were doing Ric Flair's interview. Like, to be the man, you've got to beat the man.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that's exactly what they were going for, but it sure seemed like that's what it could be. So I liked the brawl. I liked where they get, how they did this. I liked that they got Dominic to where he needed to be without him, kind of, lessening the storyline, lessening the gravitas of this women's match, because he is and is supposed to be kind of a cheesy heel who he's kind of deluded into thinking he's a lot more important than he is, and I think he's doing that well.
Very well.
But yeah, I liked every bit of this segment. I really thought they did a lot of good. I'm going to let me bury the lead here and just say I thought this episode at large was very strong and very good at getting these stories to where they needed to be. First half, arguably longer, stronger than the other half, but yeah, I thought there was stuff to like in every bit of this show into getting it where it needed to be.
Yes, that was an excellent pull apart. And now we have reason to want to see these two ladies kill it at the end of night one. And now we can look forward to them main eventing night one. It's been a lot of criticism over that. You know, a lot of people wanted to see Sammy and KO versus the Usos for the tag team titles to headline night one. But now we have more of a reason to see Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley to close out night one. So I thought they did an excellent job. Also, the Gunther or the Sheamus Drew McIntyre Gunther situation, I think we'll just have a triple threat, kind of predictable. What are your thoughts on the way that match ended?
It ended the way I thought it would. I didn't know how it was going to end, but I thought the way we were headed was a triple threat. It seems like all the guys have earned their way into this kind of WrestleMania match. And normally I'm not a guy who's begging for triple threats, but I feel like they got to a triple threat here in a pretty organic way. And this is one where I know it's lame to call things a banger, but it's going to be that. And these guys are going to beat the hell out of each other. I really think that this is the match all three of these guys have earned. And now that I got Tom, I'm almost sure of it. I'm going to ask Tom what he thinks about, first of all, that Mysterio situation. Well, not necessarily in the Mysterio situation, but how they step forward with Rhea Ripley and the Charlotte match, which has been lacking for content, but it seems like they gave us quite a bit tonight, and as well this Intercontinental Championship situation. Tom, are you there, please?
Yeah, the Rhea and Charlotte situation was extremely straightforward, but sometimes that's all you need. I mean, this was basically a meat and potatoes segment, but it was effective, and I feel like not only was the brawl effective in making you want to see whichever one you're rooting for come out on top, but it also didn't give away so much in the context of, you know, what the physicality between them is going to look like. Not that we've never seen a match before between them before, but you know what I mean. It's a new year, and you know, that was 3 years ago, you know, on the bigger stage, that is. So I feel like the key was leaving us wanting more. If I'm identifying the voice correctly, Reverend Keith seems to have phrased it well, that they've earned the spot, that they've given us a reason to want to see them there rather than just acknowledging, oh yeah, they are two big stars, and yeah, sure, that'll be good. And you know, it's a match that I've always been in favor of, but sure, yeah, this segment definitely made me want to see the match more. Sheamus and McIntyre, yeah, like you said, I wouldn't have been able to tell you exactly how they were going to get there, but they certainly got to their no contest finish that leads to Adam Pearce pointing into a camera lens as if he can see through the Tron screen, like everybody has to act like they can, and saying that it's going to be a triple threat, and as if we all hadn't already sniffed out that it was going that way. Gunther's there for a brief period of time on commentary saying, "I want a singles match." Like, okay, buddy, so you're just telling us exactly what
it's not
going to
be. He didn't like
being
on commentary either.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was amusing. It was fine. And I'm totally fine with this being the match and, you know, not wanting to feel like Drew or Sheamus are being left out of it and put into like a tag team showcase, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. Yes, Gunther absolutely needs a better match than this at WrestleMania, but you know what? They just didn't build something this year, and if this is what we're going to get instead, it's fine. I'm totally fine with this being the match, although ideally they would have started something a couple months ago, maybe teased something at the Royal Rumble or in the fallout thereof that we've been building with ever since. But that's not the case, and it's all right this year.
Yeah, the Royal Rumble definitely established that he's awesome. So that's mm-hmm. good. Can't argue with 72 minutes of just absolutely chopping the hell out of people. But yeah, there's no real – I think I'm probably in agreement with Tom. Given that they didn't give him something to sink his teeth into before this, there doesn't seem to be a lot wrong with this. Drew has been to the top of the mountain. Sheamus has been to the top of the mountain. Sheamus, one of those guys whose high days and low days are wildly different, because you don't know if he's going to be in the main event of WrestleMania or be one of the first people out in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. But I'm glad to see him in this spot. I thought it was a fun touch that Corey said that he couldn't lose on St. Patrick's Day. I wasn't even thinking about that going in, but I certainly thought about it during the match. Keith, what else do you have?
Okay, I wanted to close by focusing on the main event segment, which was the close of the show, Sammy and KO reuniting, and I thought that they paced this reunion in a very fine manner. We're 2 weeks out from the being on the grandest stage of them all, and many fans have wanted them to reunite, you know, at the Elimination Chamber or the Monday night after the Chamber, but it's kept us hooked. You know, hopefully it's increased ratings, having us tune into both SmackDown and Raw each week to see when Sammy would be able to talk some sense into KO. And in this case, it wasn't just Sammy, but it was also Cody Rhodes. I thought that was well laid out, you know. So I guess they'll be making that announcement shortly about the tag team title defense, and hopefully that'll be on night one as well. So what were your thoughts on the pacing and the overall storytelling in which we saw between Sammy, KO, and the Usos?
Okay, so this is essentially a main event storyline, even though we are promoting a non-main event match. If it was my choice, I feel like, given the build, this should be your main event of night one, and not Charlotte Rhea. That's going to be a great match. There's no doubt that those two can put together a very good match. But I feel like storyline-wise, it's really, really hard to deny these guys main event of night one. Doesn't matter to me that it's not. It's all going to be good, but that's where I would put them. I would say that. I thought the storytelling in this, and you can't talk about tonight without talking about all the steps before. I'm very glad for the sake of the character of Kevin Owens that he didn't mm-hmm. just give in, that he didn't mm-hmm. just... If he had just said okay at the drop of the hat, even weeks ago right. or even in the first segment here, I thought that that right. would have been very weak for him. And for right. the sake of his character, for the sake of the match, for the sake of and for the sake of the fans, mm-hmm, he had to be brought there.
Yeah.
We saw him drive away, which in wrestling is kind of a giveaway that they're going to be back at the end of the show, because they want to make you real sure that he's gone. So, you know, I'll forgive that, even though it's a little bit obvious. But I really liked that every character here, I think, acted within themselves from a storyline standpoint. So it really felt like that final moment between he and Sammy was earned. Tom?
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this a lot throughout the night, so I'll keep my answer brief, although I do have plenty of thoughts on it, regarding the just exactly what the specifics of what you guys are talking about. Yes, they needed to tell a story here. I actually don't think it would have been a slight on KO's character to just say okay. As you put it, Kelly, it's just that we don't want to see that happen just because it makes us all right for guessing that it was going to happen. We want it to mean something. And now, because of what we've seen develop and culminate tonight with finally them reuniting and embracing, their union means more than just, oh, yeah, this is what we thought was going to happen at WrestleMania, so here we are. There's more meaning behind it now. And yes, I'm sure I'll nitpick a bit, but gush about it as we continue to discuss it throughout the night.
Well, let's continue now. So Cody was at the center of all this, at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. At the end, we get the Huggies, and Cody is there. And at the beginning, well, Cody's not there, but he's very happy about having orchestrated this moment. And at the beginning, Cody Rhodes was there, and he called out both of them one by one to make sure that they were also at the front lines of this feud. And, of course, he knew they were, but... Tom, what did you think of how successful this was as far as Cody interjecting himself into this feud and to crossing this into kind of a three against three, which they could do this six-man on the show if they wanted. They won't, I don't think. In most years, I'd say they would, but Roman's kind of on a different level. But what did you think of bringing Cody into this storyline as the mediator of this tag team?
Yeah, this is the segment that I've been calling for a couple of weeks now, and recently on the just a few days ago on the Raw Post show. So Torch listeners are getting an earful of Tom this week. You know, Bruce had to go solo on NXT. I was just a call away. I actually didn't watch NXT live, so I would have had to turn him down. But yeah, no, this is the segment that I've been calling for, because you do not want to break away from the Sami Zayn storyline leading into and out of the Elimination Chamber and just isolate these stories from one another. And there was a week there where I was concerned that that's what was happening because the storylines were not conversing with one another. But you need these three who are going up against the bloodline with the different things that are both that are working about each of their storylines. You want to unite those. You want this to, in effect, feel like a team that's going into WrestleMania against the bloodline. And who's the leader? It's Cody. He's the one who's main eventing night two for the World Championship. So Cody does need to be the leader. Paul Heyman has asked him, are you going to be a problem or are you going to be a contender? And Cody's response, we'll hear what he actually says on Monday, but his response tonight is what I was hoping it would be. You can call me a contender or a problem. You can call me whatever you want. What I am in this story is the leader. He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, Sami Zayn is out there as Luke trying to, you know, convince Han to stick around for the final fight. But Han's got his own business to take care of, and he doesn't want to tell us why. So Cody's got to be the one saying, you know, hey, use the Force, Luke, until at the end. And, of course, I'm skipping some steps here that I'll have even more glowing things to say about, but it's just classic storytelling with – without his hero by his side, Sammy finally accepts, okay, I guess I dug this hole for myself. I need to accept my fate, and I'm going to go step up to Jay. I'm going to put myself in the crosshairs of Darth Vader. And then Han Solo comes swooping in the Millennium Falcon, yelping into his headset, and that's the KO music with KO coming in to save the day. It's, again, just classic storytelling, even if you were able to see it coming, as you suggested, with, you know, KO driving away. Of course, he's coming back. I actually thought that until they showed that, I thought maybe they are going to draw this out until Monday. But, yeah, the drive-off is a bit of a nod. But, yeah, even saying that it's classic storytelling and comparing it to the original Star Wars film doesn't do it enough credit, because and here I'll just barrel forward since I'm there killing more talking points that I'm sure we'll get asked about a couple more times. But honestly, at first, what Sammy was saying, I wasn't super on board with. I don't know how I would have rewritten it myself, so I don't have any particular suggestions. But at first, I was thinking, you know, Sammy's just coming across as too desperately upset. And KO standing there not saying anything, just like crossing his arms like a child, just seems like he's coming across as too stubborn. But then something that I never could have predicted, which makes this better, like I said, this is the segment that I've been calling for. This ended up being better than that, because KO just rips your heart out by pointing out to us what's been under our nose the entire time, but we haven't noticed it, that what Sammy's been saying is, hey, man, it doesn't matter if we're friends or not, we've got to do this together. And it turns out that's what was bugging KO. Now we finally know. He's been saying all this stuff about, oh, well, you know, you were with them, and I got beat up here, and you didn't save me, and I had to watch, and my family had to watch while I got beat up there, and you didn't save me. But what really bugged him was that the friendship was not the motivating factor for Sammy. And Sammy really had to do some self-reflection. And it came to a point where he was at the end of his rope and he confessed that he loves Kevin Owens like family. And I did not see any of those layers coming. And it just rips your heart out and stomps on it. So that really was the key to all of this. And I thought it was fantastically well done and much more layered. Like, there's some really complex stuff going on with the Sami Zayn character here. He did not feel like the heroic, pure Luke Skywalker of the story here. There's some other stuff going on, and like he loves KO like a brother. He's also out there telling Jay that he loves Jay's family. So it's very, very interesting storytelling and much more layered than we are usually lucky enough to get in professional wrestling.
And the writer can write whatever he wants, but then he's got to rely on Sammy to be able to deliver this the way that he needs. And for Owens to do a lot of real difficult acting in a non-speaking role, especially when he is going to be driving away. And we know, I know, Tom, that you and I, who cover, we're a package deal. We cover NXT a lot. And 8 years back, this is what we're covering. Sami Zayn,
yep,
and Kevin Owens. This is what we're covering. And even then, we know that they're up to the task. But they're being asked a lot. They're being asked a lot from a nuanced standpoint to do a lot of performance, even when you're not the center of the scene. And both of them are up to it all the time. I thought that, like, Owens said almost nothing in the scene where he was in the car about to drive away. He had almost nothing to say in that entire scene, and I still came away thinking he was a star there. And we talked about this, Tom, earlier in the when everybody was talking about is Sami Zayn being snubbed for WrestleMania and all that in that match against Roman Reigns, and that's a whole other kettle of fish. But we got to this, and it just seems like what we decided was, we trust the storytelling so much and we trust the performers so much that we think it's going to be good regardless. And even if we don't get that that first thing we want, it feels like it's going to deliver regardless. And are you still feeling that way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I've said again and again that just on the Roman side of things, I'm just invested in the storyline, and I don't even really have a hard prediction for the match. Right now I'm leaning Roman for a multitude of reasons, but it's just a slight tip. It feels like either person could win, and there are good reasons on both sides. And listeners of this show have probably heard me say that all too many times at this point, but it's true. I'm just invested in seeing where things go, and I don't feel like I will be. You know, we've compared it, and Wade has compared it to dramatic television. Like, you're not, you feel for the characters, but you're not, like, mad at the booker. I don't know. I guess I shouldn't speak for everybody here, but, like, if your favorite character experiences some hardship, you're just invested in that storyline. You're not mad at the writers. You know, of course, this is assuming that it's a good television program, and, like, the showrunner hasn't gotten fired and been replaced with somebody who's not up to the job, assuming it's a good television program. So yeah, that's where we're at. I'm just invested in the story, pretty much regardless of where it goes, because we have, even when there are shaky weeks, like recently we had, I haven't commented on this anywhere, but, the whole thing where Jay, revealed his choice. It was so he was so blatantly setting himself up for a super kick that I felt it kind of spoiled the moment, and that that kind of ruined that one night of storytelling for me. So not everything is perfect. Can trust that they are going to get there in the end, just like they did 8 years ago. And you're talking about Kevin Owens' nuanced acting, and there are arguably more layers being asked of the performers now, and I think that's maybe what you're suggesting as well with your verbiage. But you know, I just recall that little glimpse in the locker room that we got at our Evolution of KO just sitting there after he'd beat up CJ Parker and Sammy was getting ready for his match. And if you're not watching closely, it just looks like a dude sitting on a bench. But if you're watching, there's so much going on that tells so much of a story as to who this person is and why they're about to do what they're going to do.
So, yeah, I Tom, let me drop something on you. we talk a lot, you and I. We're homies. We talk NXT 8 years back, but we know each other's lives. And my thought was that when we finish this this NXT 8 years back, when we've gotten to the point where we have podcasted everything up to the point where we started podcasting, my idea was going to the beginning of Raw and doing Raw 23 years back. And the first thing I thought when you were just saying what you were saying is, we're not going to be talking about nuanced acting
at all.
What are you trying to say about Adam Bomb?
What I'm trying to say is there was a point where Jeff Jarrett was one of the better actors in wrestling. And that's not a comment on Jeff Jarrett. That's a comment on wrestling. So you can call us 347-215-8558 and hit star one, or email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. I do have access to that, and we will get to some emails a little bit later. Let me actually go to one of these emails and see where we are. This is from Zach Barber. Gentlemen, I thought maybe, just maybe, WWE was going to surprise me tonight and have Cody become a meaningful part of the bloodline saga, but nope. Much like a receiver who bobbles the catch on a 30 or 40-yard pass for a surefire walk-in touchdown, WWE dropped the ball. First of all, from what I read, Cody didn't mention bringing the bloodline down once. Instead, it was just done so Cody would look like a nice guy. I don't understand why WWE seems to have such a fear of Cody stating that he wants to work with Sammy and KO to bring the bloodline down. Secondly, we still don't have a Sammy-KO partnership. Was this tonight? I get playing the long story here. This was in the middle of the show, folks. I get playing the long story here, but we don't have the much time left at this point. Get them on the same page already. Cue the peaches and herb, and let's get the show on the road. Zach in Texas. Appreciate the peaches and herb reference. That amused me. But yes, they are together now. Cody and the Bloodline saga. Anything else there, Tom?
I mean, Zach and I tend to see things differently here. I guess I'll level with him and say that he and I are each bringing to that Cody's involvement in this what we were already thinking of it. I was already thinking Cody needs to be the mediator and the leader here, and he needs to bring them together as a team. So that's what I saw. And I know that Zach has already been viewing Cody as a forced project that is not working and just feels like a corporate move by WWE. So that's what he's bringing to it, and that's what he saw. So that's, I guess that's all I can say to try to fairly view that opinion, to view that as a fair opinion, rather than just saying like, oh, Cody haters, right? But, you know, I would think people that are invested enough to, you know, email into shows like this are obviously in – we are in the minority. But there is that vocal section of people that have felt, as Zach does, about Cody here. And I acknowledge that because what I'm about to say I don't think is primarily because of them, but maybe – would help them along. Something that I've thought as I've continued to think, like, as we all are, like, who is going to win this WrestleMania match and what are the pros and cons either way? And one of the things I've been thinking is just, you know, even for all the pros on Cody's side of it, validating the push that they've put behind him, the Dusty Rhodes redemption storyline, you know, the WrestleMania stage and everything, Roman's just got this incredible run going right now that still feels like it's got most of its gas still in its tank. You know, he could reign for another year as a heel, split baby, reign for another year. And I think, you know, if the quality of storytelling maintains, we'd all be fine with that. And they've got the historical elements, you know, that there are what are essentially arbitrary numbers, where he's going to cross the 1,000-day mark in May. So, of course, he would have to win at Mania. And maybe they'll do a true Dusty finish where we get visuals of both, that there's a moment where we do think Cody has won, but that's not how it goes in the end. But anyway, what I'm getting to is that one of the things I'm telling myself now is that maybe losing would actually benefit Cody more. And you just think of that visual at the end of WrestleMania 28, I want to say, where Cena had just lost to The Rock, and he's just sitting on the entrance ramp like, damn, after all of that, after that year-long build to this, I'm the loser? Oh, I've got to reevaluate some things, or whatever we are to read on John Cena's face. And I don't remember what he did the next night. He probably came out smiling, and he wasn't swinging towels around yet at that point, I don't think, but probably just bounced right back as John Cena did. But maybe Cody Rhodes, who I don't think they're phrasing it this way, but I believe is still undefeated in WWE since his return, at least in big matches, and I know he hasn't had too many of those due to circumstances, but maybe it would help to knock him down and keep the chase going to where this character, still as a babyface likely for now, needs to reevaluate and get us more invested in the storyline, in a similar sense to how, by giving Sammy and KO more time rather than just saying, like, yep, they're together, that's the match we're going to have, we can be along for the ride a bit more. So whenever Cody does triumph in whatever way he ends, whatever form that ends up coming in, we've had more of a story behind it than we do now, even though I have been on the side of this story. If he does win at WrestleMania, I will be, as suggested already in various forms, I'm in favor of whatever they do. Again, assuming that it's of the quality that we've seen thus far, I'm sure there's some ridiculous way that they could displease me, but I'm not expecting that.
All right, 914, we're going to go to you after this email, but let me get to one more email. This is going to be from Azan White. Hey, Wade and Tom, do you feel Rhea and Flair should be the main event of night one, or should that go to Jay, or that go to Sammy versus KO and Sammy versus Jay and Jimmy? What's up with the booking of LA Knight? He seems like a guy who could be a solid or IC or US champ, but they have him lose every week. What do you think about Adam Pearce and his role? He has been doing this for 3 years now, and I would say he's probably the best figurehead person since Teddy Long. That is from Azan White. I think that if they are going to force this role of Adam Pearce on us, and I don't think they have to, then I think that this is not a bad thing. I'm done with mega heel authority figures. Maybe not done, but they need to take a break from it, and they have. And I think that the way that they use Adam Pearce is pretty okay. LA Knight, he's not a young man, so I understand that he's probably not going to be pushed to the top. But you've got a guy here who can talk, who can do all of the things that The Miz does and stay relevant like The Miz does even after a loss. But you brought him up, you had him feud with Bray, and you jobbed him to Bray multiple times, and he lost at every step of this feud. And now you don't know what to do with him. And they don't know what to do with Bray because Brock Lesnar didn't want to work with Bray. So I don't know what you do with LA Knight next. He is somebody that I covered in NWA, and I thought that NWA positioning him as a heel was not the best use of his talents, but that's what they did. I don't know that he can visit that level all that much in an era where people are holding championships for a longer time. It would have been very easy 5 years ago, 10, 20, to say that he was an obvious candidate for those mid-level championships. It is less so now, given that they are doing a little less hot potato with those championships. I think we kind of covered Rhea and Flair versus KO and Sammy versus Jay and Jimmy. That one I feel is up in the air. I would have said the tag match easily before tonight. And I think that's where I'm going to stay, but I'm not going to, it's not a hill I'm going to die on. If they go with, even based on where they've gotten to tonight, if they felt they had to do Rhea and Flair last, I would say not the way I'd go, but it's not such a mistake that I can't live with it. Tom, on Azan's email.
Now, when I was finally able to be patched in here, I heard Keith saying that Charlotte and Rhea are definitely main eventing night one. Did I miss something and that has been confirmed, or are we just assuming that at this point?
These are tweets. And these tweets seem to be in the know. But no, Vince didn't call me up, if that's what you're asking.
Okay. So these are tweets from, like, quote unquote sources, right?
Yes. Quote unquote sources. SRS is saying this is so far the plan.
All right. Well, whether it's he or Meltzer or whomever, I personally take all of that to be rumor until it's not. That we do have the Stranger Things parody from Rhea with John Cena's voice saying that she is the main event of WrestleMania, which is a slight variation on how they often say that everybody in a big match is main eventing WrestleMania. So this could just be that. I don't view it as confirmation one way or the other. I was looking at Rhea and Charlotte as the surefire main event until you pointed out to me, I believe, while we were recording one of our podcasts, so it's probably on record, that this is a great opportunity to put a tag team championship in the main event. Of course, you know, in a different era, the very first WrestleMania was main evented by a tag team match, but that was a novelty thing, and that's, you know, a completely different story than what we're talking about now. So even you just pointing that out to me was like, oh, wow, you're right, and it does feel like more of a main event storyline. So rather than the idea of like, hey, there are two nights, so let's make sure that the genders get equal share of the top spot on each night, which I am certainly not against, and it's gone well so far since they've done the two-night thing, although now I'm remembering that the 2020 36 when did the John Cena, one of them was Brock and Drew, and one of them was Taker and AJ. I was going to say Cena and Bray, but that was, I guess, earlier in the night. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. But anyway, when they have done it, not only has it gone well, it's felt justified. It hasn't felt obligatory. Whereas this year, it does feel like the tag match is just like, hey, sorry, this really is the bigger match this year. So I guess that's where I stand on that. But I'm certainly not upset with Charlotte and Rhea main eventing. I mean, that'll be awesome. Side note that I'm remembering, Charlotte's whole thing about Rhea not being, you know, whatever Charlotte, I forget the exact words, whatever Charlotte was saying about Rhea, seems to be very much forgetting that Rhea won a women's championship at WrestleMania 37. But I guess the point is it wasn't against Charlotte. So, okay. I did like that segment overall. But Adam Pearce, I agree with everything you said. My only issue with Adam Pearce is that he wasn't introduced. He just showed up one day. I remember the segment because a bunch of dude wrestlers were arguing about something backstage, and he walked in and started telling them what to do. I think he booked a battle royal or something along those lines. And I was like, well, who's this guy? And I'm sorry, I wasn't aware of who Adam Pearce was before he showed up. But yeah, he didn't get an introduction. But since then, everything's been fine. Totally in favor of it for the reasons you stated. And the other thing was, LA Knight. I mean, Raw after, I agree with everything you said. He is not a young man in the context of the wrestling world. I don't foresee him moving particularly high on any card, but we are headed toward the post-WrestleMania reset. And speaking of being talked into things on podcasts, just this past Monday night, Wade talked me into the idea I was suggesting to Wade that LA Knight will be involved in WrestleMania, even though his whole thing is that he's being left out of it. He'll be an agitator. I mean, of course, the whole acknowledging on TV that he's being left out of it, of course, means that he's going to be a part of it. He's not going to have a match. He's going to come out and complain that he's not a part of it. And Wade talked me into the idea that that's a perfect time for the glass to break and for Steve Austin to make his cameo and deliver a stunner. So that sounds great. That is exactly the kind of thing I think LA Knight is here for right now. If they do want to further capitalize on the groundswell of popularity he's experiencing, maybe we look at Raw after Mania or even just the coming months after that to see if they want to do anything. But, you know, clock's ticking.
And really, how would he – it's got to be Austin. Because Austin can come out and he can do the yeah things that LA Knight does. It just seems like this is a match made in heaven. These two here. So I think that's where they're going to head. Also, otherwise, I don't know what they're doing with LA Knight at all.
I was suggesting that it was going to be New Day, but then they burned Xavier Woods tonight.
Yeah, and they said that Kofi is going to have ankle surgery. And ankle surgery isn't a quick thing to get back from, especially if you are a professional wrestler. So I don't know. I don't know how much of that is kayfabed. I don't know what to expect. Xavier Woods, the only singles wrestler to win tonight in a singles match, so... good for him on the road to WrestleMania, but I don't know where that's going to head either. Let's go to 914 before we go to those last couple emails. I got a couple of 914s on my list, but not this one. So go ahead and say who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, Brad in Florida. How are you?
Oh, I've got a Brad on my list, and it wasn't here. Brad, always good to hear from you. I love your insights, and I'm doing well. What do you have tonight?
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks, Tom. So, first of all, I loved this episode. I thought this was a terrific episode. The one puzzling thing, and I know how unimportant it was, but... you know, the Liv Morgan tag team match, and I don't even want to spend that much time on it, but, like, they qualified for a four-way or a fatal four-way tag team match at WrestleMania. Like, what a waste of time. Like, I thought Triple H wasn't going to waste time with just getting matches on and people on just for the sake of it, and that really made me think that he is, you know, that he is trying to just jam people into the card for no reason because... it's for no stakes, apparently. It's not for anything. So I'm guessing it'll be like Ronda, Shayna, Liv Morgan, Raquel, and two other teams, and that'll be it. I just found that puzzling. But the show itself was great. I love how they bookended it with the Kevin Owens thing, start and finish. I love how you thought he left the arena and was gone. Getting back to your point that while I was on hold that you were talking about Cody, you know, I think it would be really good for him to have some adversity and not win this match against Roman. And I don't think that's going to be the result. I do think he's going to win, but I think it would be a much better story if, kind of like you were talking about before, if he lost this match probably by cheating by the bloodline, but if he lost this match and you had a situation where he had to somehow finagle a rematch at SummerSlam, That would get Roman to 1,000 days, and that would put, like, a real struggle in the story. Because, let's face it, it really hasn't been a struggle. He came in at 30 for the Royal Rumble. He won it, and I like the guy. But I just don't think it's time to end this bloodline thing. Like, what the Usos are doing is too good. What Roman is doing is too good. And if I have a billion-dollar company, and I'm not saying Cody wouldn't be a good representative at one point in time for the company, but I'm keeping Roman literally and figuratively at the head of the table, you know, like, or maybe not literally, but figuratively at the head of the table, because, you know, all the stuff that could happen with a sale of the company or whatever, I think you want someone of his magnitude still holding that belt. I don't think it's time to give it up, and I don't think it's time to destroy the bloodline. Like you said, I don't think it's stale yet, and I'm predicting that, you know, Cody will win at Mania, and Kevin Owens and Sammy will win the tag team championships, and you'll have no titles on the bloodline. I just don't think that that's the right direction to go. And after watching tonight, as much as I loved the KO and Sammy segments and everything that happened, it even cemented it for me further that I don't think it's the right time.
Brad, I couldn't agree with you more. I absolutely, I've actually been predicting Roman to win this match. And I know that part of that is because, and Tom can attest to this, we see long-form champions, and it is very easy for us to bet against them, especially in NXT, and say they're going to lose this and move up. So I'm a little gun-shy to bet against champions at this point, but I also don't think – it's not that I don't think Cody's the guy necessarily. I don't think he is, but that doesn't matter. I think that – and it's not that I don't think he's the guy because of who he is, because that also isn't the case. I think that he's not the guy right now because the story doesn't serve him as well as it serves others. But I also agree with you wholeheartedly that a guy who just comes back, wins a match, doesn't have that narrative. It's as far as storytelling goes, it's literally a Deus Ex Machina. God in the machine. Somebody just flies down from above and wins it for the good guys in the end because the good guys couldn't win it. I don't think that it's strong storytelling. And I think it's genuinely, I don't want to get super writing, acting business on you, but this would be a Deus Ex Machina and it would really, really bum me out. I think that if it's going to be Cody, and I'm cool with that because I like Cody's act, then I think that he has to overcome a loss here. I absolutely think that he does. I think that KO and Sammy should win the championships here, but I would also be in favor of Roman defeating Cody. And I don't care what that looks like. Whether he's going to get obvious rematches right away because it's by hook or by crook, or if this is just something where he has to work his way back. But I think that that is Roman's championship reign has earned that. And I think that that whoever gets there has to do more than what Cody has done now, because the Royal Rumble is my favorite match in the world. But just winning it, coming in number 30 and winning it, and I get that it was a great Rumble. But just doing that, for me, is not enough to get you there from a storyline standpoint. If they do it, I'll understand it. But I would be heavily in favor. If I was booking this based on everything that came before, I would book Roman to win this match. Tom?
As I sit here near my Shayna Baszler NXT belt that's hung on the wall, I don't have a huge prediction for the tag match, but I do think it would be interesting to see KO and Sammy win, because we're assuming that goes on night one, and then you go into night two, like, oh, the bloodline's crumbling, and is this in Roman's head? And it gives commentary that many more things to talk about, that the bloodline's already lost something at WrestleMania. So I laid out, you know, agreeing with you guys in so many ways, why I'm currently thinking, like, okay, it should be Roman, I think. Here's why Cody should lose here, so I agree. But I'll just go ahead, for the sake of conversation, and play devil's advocate and say that, with Cody winning, that doesn't mean the bloodline's done. There's always the possibility that Roman may disappear from TV for a little while to sell the loss. But a bloodline on the other side, actually, come to think of it, the bloodline has never existed without the championship at the top of it. So what does that look like? What's Roman's demeanor? Does he start being more abusive of the people in the group? Does Solo become a more important member? Does Jay finally come to terms with what he's really got going on deep down? And does the eventual Roman-Jay rematch that we know we've been headed towards, is that for the championship, or is it just a personal feud? The moment that we've all been waiting for, where Roman is demanding that he's the head of the table, and then the Rock's music hits, that has never needed the championship. Sure, just like with 2 years ago at WrestleMania, I think it was. No, it was just last year. Right? Whatever. When they did, like, the championship for champion, it felt like they added the titles in a way that didn't mean anything. And I felt that way, and I looked back and I was like, you know what? It kind of does make it feel just that little bit bigger, though. And every year at WrestleMania, you want to create the absolute biggest match that you possibly can with the ingredients that you have on hand. So, okay, I think they got that right. Sure, Rock versus Roman with the title on the line might feel a little bit bigger because they can put that big gold logo between them. But it doesn't need that. And I might argue also that it would be more interesting without it, because with it, it's like, well, we know Rock's not winning, and we probably know Rock's not winning either way. But there's a bit more of a question mark without the title involved. But that's that tangent for you. Just playing a little devil's advocate there. I think the bloodline remains interesting and becomes interesting in new ways without the title, whether or not that should happen 2 weeks from now is a different question.
Yes, indeed. Brad, go ahead if you got another one.
Yeah, I mean, great insights, guys. And I'll be quick, but here's the way that I would book it if it was me. My friend Matt texted me earlier and he said, you're going to take the title away from Roman with 36 days until he gets to 1,000 days or 40 days, whatever it is. Like, it can't happen that way. So if I'm Cody, I want to build some adversity, and I want to make people really thirsting for me to win that championship. And if it happens at Mania, that's not the way it goes. What I would do if it was just me and the decision was totally up to me, I would say Cody goes out and gets completely screwed at WrestleMania. It ends with Roman winning. The Usos no longer have the tag team championships. Roman, the side storyline is that Roman is furious with his brothers for not having that championship. He's treating them like complete garbage. Cody's going out every week begging for a rematch. Not begging, but saying, I got screwed. I need a rematch. This is unfair. Whatever he's saying, he decides that he has to win Money in the Bank. And I know Money in the Bank is usually for an up-and-coming star, but you could use it in this way. He goes out and wins Money in the Bank. Roman's at his 1,000 days. He challenges Roman at SummerSlam with his briefcase for that title. That's the way he gets the second shot after Roman repeatedly refusing him, and that's when he wins it. Because that adversity building is really what's going to make Cody beloved and make it feel like he really deserves it, more so than this win would. And tonight was all about build. I mean, I loved the Charlotte Rhea segment. I thought it was so good. I was telling a friend earlier that I'm not excited for that match at all. And when Rhea started saying, "Charlotte, I see no fear in your eyes when you look at me whatsoever, and that bothers me," it had me. Like, that was it. And I absolutely loved that whole entire, the brawl was great. The segment in the ring leading up to the brawl was great. I really gotta tell you, they completely did a 180 on me. And honestly, that's really all I got. But like, oh, on LA Knight too, his losing reminds me of what happened with Theory. If you remember, before Theory made that minor character change to being Tough Theory, he was losing every single match for a period of time, like really losing. Like, I think he lost like 7 weeks in a row or something. And it reminds me, maybe that's what they're doing with LA Knight. I know I'm kind of all over the place, but that's kind of my final point. And the match of the weekend on WrestleMania weekend that I'm most excited for, honestly, is Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker. And I know you guys are excited for that too. So have a good night, guys. And I want to hear your opinion, especially on the way that I suggested booking the Cody thing, if you guys are in agreement. Because, again, billion-dollar company, you don't take the belt away from a guy like Roman that quickly and that easily. I just don't think you do that. But have a good night, guys. Thank you.
And we thank you. As far as taking the championship from a guy like Roman, it's hard to think about this in terms of not also thinking about Fox, because you're presenting this to potentially a bigger crowd, a different crowd, and to different people who can just land on it in a different way than you would if it was just the expected hardcore wrestling crowd. And the caveat there is that most of wrestling in any given week is just watched by the same people. So I don't know. I don't know how much it can be grown. But again, in terms of that storyline, I would say at the very least, drag Cody out to SummerSlam. And I don't know if he wins or loses. And I don't know if they know if he wins or loses, but, I would say to your friend that 1,000 days is, it's cool, but it's not something they should consider if the storyline is at its natural ending. I would say do your story regardless of what the calendar says. But that said, I would say he should go beyond 1,000 days just because I don't think it's the time to move it to Cody yet. Anyway, Tom.
Yeah, and of course, like I said, it's not just the line. I honestly think Roman could hold the championship for 2 more years, and it would be good television if the quality of the storytelling remains. You mentioned Fox. I'm not just trying to leap on a recent headline because it's the hot topic, but I do, when I dig just a little bit under the surface of what this idea of WWE trying to work with, they're trying to bring gambling in as an element of their revenue stream, I also then wonder if that's going to affect how they decide on outcomes of big matches. So that may be something we have to consider more and more moving forward, although at this point without it in practice, I'm not sure exactly how that would work. But to answer Brad's question more specifically, if they were to do what he is suggesting, I think I would be fine with it. It sounds logical. It sounds like a perfectly swell character arc. I think what I would change is that Cody should not get screwed. I mean, maybe there is some kind of dusty finish, but not in the sense that cheating occurred. I would like to see Cody lose clean if he loses, and I just say that because the main thing, and I know I've said this ad nauseum, but the main thing, if anything I dislike about the Bloodline saga, it's that Roman is constantly cheating to win matches that he could have won anyway. And of course, that's not what we're supposed to think. We're supposed to think like, oh, Finn Balor would have beat him if the rope hadn't broken. Cesaro would, I forget how the Cesaro match ended, but like any of these challengers, these are people, he's had a bunch of people put up against him that he should just go over clean. And those are the people he always ends up needing the interference to help him out with. So there have been, you know, there's the whole thing that like Roman hasn't been pinned since 2019, but we've gotten so many visual pins on him. And I really think that's a problem, that they should not have been doing that, that you don't want to spend, like Solo Sikoa debuting at Clash at the Castle to screw Drew McIntyre. There's an example of where you want to do it, because Drew really posed the threat, and that was a huge stage, and it felt like a big moment, and it was an excellent introduction for that character to the main roster, and really just such a crowning moment on the storytelling of WWE in 2022. But you don't need to cheat to beat Finn Balor. So, or you know, have the rope break or whatever the heck that was. I remember that one the best because it was so awful. There are plenty of others that aren't leaping to mind. But yeah, for that reason, clean victory from Roman. And that, I think, would even give Cody more to contend with in his mind. Like, oh, I was not good enough. It's not that I was good enough and Jimmy super kicked me at the wrong moment. It's that he actually was not good enough on the stage that he had been striving to get to.
Hall of Fame, the great Muda. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. This makes me very happy. I'm a New Japan completist. I've seen every match they've done in the last 7 years. Downside, Great Muda has not been in that particular promotion for most of those years, but he has been doing some retirement tours. He had his match with this is a guy so beloved that he's doing matches with guys from every company. He did a match with Shinsuke Nakamura, but that is Great Muda. Tom, do you have any comment on Great Muda going into the WWE Hall of Fame?
You know, about these Fatal 4-Way Showcase matches. No, I, you know, you know I was hoping that you wouldn't throw to me on it. Because I just don't, like, I know who he is. I know why he's significant, but I don't have any specific comment. It's not a swap. Ask me about Charlie Chaplin films all day long, but not intimately familiar enough with this particular individual to say anything more than Michael Cole said on commentary.
Does Charlie Chaplin also spit green mist into the face of his enemies?
You know, there was that one movie that one time, but it just sort of looked gray because, you know, film stock at the time.
Yeah, right. I mean, so few. Yes. The Immigrant, folks. That's the one. He could probably spit on somebody in The Immigrant. He could have.
Yeah.
No,
it was Edna's mother. The deleted scene that showed her death when she didn't make it off of the ship. She was just spewing it all over the place.
So about these four-way showcases, Tom, Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan defeat Emma and Tegan Knox. Liv Morgan pins Emma after Oblivion in 3:43. They didn't give us a lot of information on what these are. I don't know if I'm supposed to assume that these are taking the place of the Battle Royals entirely, but if we're going to burn eight people on these showcase matches, I don't know what else to call them. But if they're doing these eight-person showcase matches, I also don't know why they need two nights of WrestleMania. I'll look at these with an open mind, but it seems like I don't know that Liv Morgan is all that. I'm actually pretty sure she's not. But given that a lot of people like her, she's extremely popular and has been booked to be where she is, these, with two nights of WrestleMania, it just seems like this is just a, we have no singles match for you. We'll throw you into this. And yes, she won this match. And yes, I think that no matter who they throw at her in this, this four-way showcase match, she will be victorious. This whole concept feels lazy-ish to me, and no different really from a battle royal, other than the fact that you could potentially showcase more of these. Okay, there I say the word showcase without even meaning to. You could show off what some of these talents can do more in this match than in a battle royal context. So what did you think of this concept and the match that got us there?
Well, the match that got us there was just a match on SmackDown, nothing real special there. And I'm not putting a lot of stock in Liv Morgan heading into this match just because she got the fall. For whatever it's worth, Raquel also did her finisher before Liv did her finisher. It also was a foregone conclusion because the thrown together team of the Australian and the New Zealander were not just going who are not positioned in strong ways on TV. They were not going to win this. But I one of my takeaways was, I think, similar to Brad, like, oh, so that's where Ronda's going to be on the card. Okay. But you know what? Historically in the historic context of WrestleMania, I'm okay with this being something that's on the card. There are years, I know, you know, this era is this era, but there are years and years and years of WrestleMania cards where a lot of the matches didn't really mean all that much. There were a few important matches and then just a bunch of other stuff that happened on the show. And it's hit and miss. Sometimes, you know, really, really hit. And sometimes you're like, why is Roddy doing a Piper's Pit on this one? I don't know. That's why. I don't know why that's what I pick out. That's just what came to mind first. You know, I'm fine with something like this being on the card. I prefer the Battle Royal. I've also resigned myself to the idea that the Battle Royal, which in some cases had been, depending on whom they were putting over, had been relegated to the pre-show, in recent years has just been put on the SmackDown go-home show. So it's not even on the WrestleMania stage at all. They call it the WrestleMania SmackDown. And just because we haven't heard that phrase this year and they're already promoting Backlash and not calling it WrestleMania Backlash, I'm hoping that those are things that have died, that just the overuse of the WrestleMania term just to try to maximize that branding, but honestly cheapen it as a result. But all that aside, with this, although I do hope that even if it is on SmackDown, we still get an Andre Battle Royal, just because I've come to really like that tradition. If the women get one too, great. They haven't named it though. I know there was the whole the Moolah issue. My suggestion was the Sensational Sherry Battle Royal, but whatever. The issue with this is what you said, that they just sort of threw it out there. It's just randomly cutting to Wade Barrett being like, oh, we're going to do some showcase matches and here's a qualifier. It's basically saying, hey, we're just going to throw some random people on the card. This is just some filler because, you know, so it doesn't feel like, if you're a big Liv Morgan fan, it doesn't feel like your favorite got left out. So honestly, the issue with this is that they aren't making it feel like a bigger deal, and they don't have to put a lot of effort into that. Just give them a trophy that doesn't mean anything, or put together a little graphic of, like, this is the WrestleMania showcase. I also don't love that it's a fatal four-way tag match. That definitely doesn't do it for me, but whatever. You know, it's a way to get people on the card. that could feel like more than it is. It doesn't have to feel like a lot. Again, just like Braun Strowman holding up the greatest battle, the greatest Royal Rumble green belt that we never ever saw again. It made it feel like a, like you kind of saw something. The bragging rights trophies, do that kind of thing. But yeah, other than that, it really does just feel like filler.
Okay, let's go to an email from Christopher Thacker. Hey, guys, I cannot call in, but I must say that I found something that has been missing for years, and I'd like your opinion. Under Paul Levesque writing and storytelling, I'm finally starting to feel storylines again. The emotion hasn't been there for so long, and it isn't because it's an icon versus icon when Rock versus Hogan or some other big wrestling match, but it's a storyline and multiple ones that do it for me. As a fan in my 40s, it feels good. I'd love your guys' opinion if I am overreacting or if you guys feel it too. Chris Thacker, PW Torch subscriber from Oklahoma, listening on delay. I feel like things have, I don't know, I think that people thought things would be more starkly different, and a lot of things are the same and a lot of things are different, but much of what is different is just which talents are being used, and a lot of what's different, the same, is storytelling approaches. I will say that they have continued to grow and nurture the Bloodline storyline extremely well. And sometimes when different people take over, and I saw this many times in, for instance, WCW, somebody would take over storyline and it would be botched or it would be changed. And like when Vince Russo took over WCW, you could really, really tell right away. And I don't mean that in a good way for when Vince Russo took over WCW, because WWE let him go for a reason, and it was okay. That's a completely different question from what you asked. But anyway, as for what has been missing in this era, I think that we have not gotten, I don't know that we are in a completely different place, and that we can say that wrestling has been saved, but I will say that the little changes that we've seen, we've liked, and I will say, as always, that it's very hard to know how much the power has really changed hands and how much really still remains where it was, because Triple H is somewhat deferential to Vince McMahon. And I don't want to speak in absolutes, but Triple H has not made it a particular secret that that he has Vince McMahon in his ear, Tom.
Yeah, and of course it's all business, and covering NXT the way we have for years and years, we've talked about several times how, yes, NXT was Triple H's product, but so much of it, even by his own testimony, was in the mold of the WWE main roster, because it was developmental for so many people, but it was also developmental for Triple H to go on and not make his own product, but do his version of what was already Vince McMahon's successful, tried and true product. So that is what we're seeing, is just the spin on it. And, of course, going back to SummerSlam, what Wade relayed, what always made, regardless of what was being relayed or not, was that, of course, we're not going to see a hard split. People on the roster are already – this was already Vince McMahon's roster. They've already been – the wrestlers have already been slotted where they are. There are already storylines in place. This is going to be a gradual transition. It probably won't be until SummerSlam 2023 where we can really say, like, okay, enough transition has taken place with storyline forwarding and wrestlers moving up and down the card and being reintroduced or possibly let go or whatever it ends up being by that point, that then we can really say, okay, we're seeing Triple H's WWE here. And still, it won't feel like a radically different product, and it shouldn't for those business reasons already stated. But yes, I do like, and I'm someone who has been very forgiving of at its worst moments. Although, you know, I'll criticize it when I'll criticize WWE when I feel it's really called for. But I do, under Vince McMahon, I would always try to understand where he was coming from with the decisions he was making, even if I felt I disagreed with them, because he is the most successful promoter of all time. So even if there was something that I felt like, oh, why would he do that? I'm like, oh, well, you know, he kind of has a track record. Let me try to see this his way. Sometimes I wouldn't come out agreeing with him, but I always strived to. That said, just to, you know, frame this where it needs to be, you know, framed coming from the voice that it's coming from, I do also very much appreciate that we are seeing deeper storylines, as we covered with the Sammy and KO thing, akin to what we would see on NXT, that for a very long time there had the benefit of being taped and being planned out and put in the can. There was that one time that they filmed two different finishes to one match, and because apparently at the time of the taping they weren't sure which one they were going to go forward with, and we covered that when it happened. I want to say that was 2018, or no, 20, eh, I don't really remember, whatever. It was Gargano and Velveteen Dream. But, you know, for the most part, it was in the can, and they had to write out 3 to 4 to 5 weeks at a time. And we are seeing a similar level of commitment to seeing through the storylines on this version of the main roster now. So yes, it is making the product much more satisfying. There were times, and I told this to Wade sometimes live on the air, like, yeah, I'm only tuning in when you're asking me to be the co-host, and otherwise I'm just, you know, I'm listening to you to keep up because the TV's really bad right now. Right now, I am tuning in because this storyline, you know, particularly, I say this storyline singular because particularly the Bloodline, but it is much, it is appointment television once again because of the quality of the main storylines. Unfortunately, there are some that have fallen by the wayside as well. For example, Belair versus Asuka, there's literally no storyline there at all. They get a segment every week where they just go out there, stare at each other, and that's it. Commentary talks about how they'll have a match at WrestleMania. There's nothing else there. You know, the Trish and Lita match that we're going to have at WrestleMania, which we always end up, we always call the Trish and Lita match, forgetting that, oh, Becky and Bayley are also there. And Dakota and Io as well, just but rarely even mentioned by name. Just, you know, the damage control others. Trish and Lita showed up totally randomly, apropos of nothing, and they have lent nothing to the storyline other than, you know, people who are watching much more casually just saying like, oh, hey, I remember when I used to like them. But, boy, they're just bringing nothing to it, and they're being given nothing to work with other than their own respective legacies. So it's not all peaches and herb, but, there's definitely been an improvement.
Well, lest we go on with more peaches and herb comments, let's go to an email. This is from Hector from Chicago. Assuming the match between Ray and Dom does happen, the only thing I can think of that will finally get Ray to do it would be Dom slapping his mom. Dom doesn't have to do it premeditated. If it does take place in a video like the previous ones at their home or at the Hall of Fame ceremony during an argument in the heat of the moment, he slaps his mom. He can even look kind of like remorseful after it, knowing he did wrong. Feel like that would be the one thing that pushes Ray into the match. I suppose he can slap his sister in the heat of a moment, but the mom would hit a lot harder with the viewers. Also loved the ending to SmackDown tonight. Hector from Chicago. I watched this. My wife watched the first half of this show with me, and she was so into the story with Ray and Dominic. And I've been watching wrestling for a very long time, so She's been in the room for a lot of Rey's career. Like, she knows Rey, and I am a big, big, big Rey Mysterio fan. Like, I'm not going to compare myself to anyone, but I would win, is all I'm saying. So, I'm psyched about this, and I think that they stepped toward this in a really interesting way, considering that Dominic is an intentional joke. I don't know what I thought the next step was going to be to get this to where we need to go, but given that we know that when they use these wrestlers, they sometimes go the telenovela approach, like they did with Dominic when he was a child, with Eddie versus Rey, I'm actually pretty into Hector's idea here. I could co-sign on this, Tom.
Yeah, I'll mostly be repeating myself from Monday because it was the exact same question then, and my thought hasn't changed too much. Although I will add the anecdote that my partner was also in the room for a lot of this, and she was practically jumping up and down, begging for someone to kick Dominic's punk ass, as she put it, and to be fair, as Rey also put it. Although the way Rey, I really loved how Rey teased what a promo might sound like if he really was trying to hype up the match, which of course we know is what he was doing, but that he said, like, I'm not going to fight my son, but I will beat up this punk ass kid, or, you know, however he phrased it. That was a real nice touch. The segment I thought was very good because even though it ultimately ended the same way with Rey walking away with his head hung while Dom talks a bunch of crap, at least we got Rey confronting Dom this time, which is a development upon them just doing the same exact thing for months and months and months, even though they deliberately moved Rey away from Dom for a while just to try to keep it fresh. And then they put him back together. And what happens Monday night? The exact same kind of segment we were already seeing before, with really little to no change in it. So at least we got a remix of that tonight. That felt like a slight forwarding. What I said on Monday was that I don't feel like the family is involved enough on television to make that feel like a big enough deal. I also don't love the idea of a, not that it's never been done before, but I don't love the idea of a non-wrestler of whatever age she is. And I'm not trying to say she looks matronly. She's a beautiful woman. But, you know, taking even a worked slap just feels like a bit of an unnecessary risk. For whatever it's worth, Rey did mention the words your sister in his promo tonight. So at least, like, they're acknowledging that she exists versus whatever the last time we saw her on TV was, I guess that Thanksgiving segment. Or maybe there was a Christmas one. I don't remember. But, you know, my thought, and I haven't really changed it because they are waiting until the last minute to confirm this. So, and while the Hall of Fame, diminished though it has become over the years, it is still a big deal to the people who get inducted. It should not be treated like an angle in the sense that the whole thing's an angle. But even Rey just saying on TV, hey, Dom, I would really love nothing more than for you to be by my side during that speech, they've already turned it into an angle because we are going to be thinking about that even if they approach it completely straightforward. Now, Conan in Rey is also somebody that we don't see on WWE TV, just like the family members, but this will be after he has walked out there and given a speech inducting Rey, talking about all the reasons why Rey means a lot to him and why he's like a brother or whatever he's going to say. So let Rey give his speech. Let him have the pure Hall of Fame moment. Don't mess with that. But then on the Tron afterward, or, you know, in a backstage segment, however they want to handle it, show that while Rey was giving his speech, Dom has beat up Conan. And that's what You know, I feel like all the storytelling you need is there for Rey to finally say, okay, you know what? The person you've become is no longer my son, so I am going to go teach a lesson to this punk-ass kid.
I love the blurring of lines here. I love that they are talking about the Hall of Fame. Like, my eyes bugged out when he said that. Like, but that's not canon. You can't do that. So I'm very interested to see what they do there. But indeed, I hope that it doesn't sully his moment to have it be a storyline. But yeah, I think that's effective hype to get it there, to mess with the Hall of Fame. So let's go to one more email. This is from Joe from New York. Hey guys, we are just 2 weeks away from WrestleMania and Roman is still sitting at home. Come on, it should be all hands on deck. Just 15 nights out from WrestleMania. Roman's lack of showing up on TV is hurting the build to the show. He has hurt the build to this match. WWE does not get a pass. Not only should part-time contract be a thing of the past, but at the very least, if you're going to be give part-time deal, people need to understand the month of March is a work month. WWE has to spell it out in the contract. You will show up to all TV shows in the month of March. Also, I don't want to hear the excuse, well, it keeps the guy fresh. If you can't come up with a full month's TV for your champion leading into what is built as the biggest show of the year, then all the writers and bookers should be fired. It's your job to create very good TV. Roman sitting home on March 17th, 2 weeks before WrestleMania, is not acceptable. It is lazy, and it's that kind of create is the reason why Raw only got 1.7 this last Monday. People want to see the stars. It's WrestleMania season. Joe from New York. I understand you want to see your champion. I grew up in a very different era where you didn't even expect your champion to be on TV. If your champion showed up in a match, that was a treat. Whether it was Hogan, Warrior, Flair, whoever it was, the champion of the companies I was following at the time, you didn't expect them to be in a match on the show because you expected that you'd have to pay to see them. And Joe isn't just saying that. He's saying that in the bigger story at large. You want him there to move the stories forward. For me, this episode was Exhibit A of an episode where you don't need him. Not only that, but one where he'd be in the way. I understand that you can gain something by having him there, but this episode, you had Cody, but Cody being there was to get other matches to the forefront. You've still got time. I know it's soon, but there are 2 weeks, two shows every week, and we know that they'll put Roman on whichever one they want. And the fact that you're wondering which ones he'll be on, to me, is part of the draw. Yeah, I don't think this is a massive problem. And I certainly don't think it's on the writers to create a reason for him to be there. I think that the long term is more important than the short term. And if you can gain more out of his championship reign from not having him on this 1 week, then you do it. But this week, the hard sell was on Sammy and KO versus the Usos. And in a week like that, you could have Roman there. There are ways you could do it to have Roman there. But I think he would have gotten in the way of some of this storytelling. I will hear out any arguments to the opposition Tom, are you opposed or no?
See, look, Kelly, when I was 14 years old in 1999, I was giddily skipping home every single Monday to see what Triple H and Stephanie were going to say before booking Big Show versus The Rock for the 20th time in a row. I absolutely loved the product at that time. Everything I just said is true, but it's also contextualized from going back on WWE Network and Peacock and rewatching it and going like, oh boy, I was really into it then, but this is just the same show over and over and over again. They didn't have much creative, it was just the star. I don't know. I mean, speaking in a macro context, we could go back, maybe we'll go 23 years back and talk about it week to week. Sure, I lived that. I get that. You want to see the stars, totally understood. But I feel like as I've matured and continued to watch different eras of wrestling and going back to before I was watching it live, and sure, I didn't experience it watching it live, so my viewing experience is different. But in the days where you didn't see Hogan all that often, in retrospect, it feels like you did because he was champ so often and he was in the main event so often and he won so often and he just had action figures all over the place and whatnot. He was a ubiquitous figure. But when you really look at the nuts and bolts, he was kept special. And I know that's not the answer that the emailer wants to hear. The way he phrased it was keeping him fresh. But I mean, that is the answer, and it is effective. They can be used to pop ratings, and I know that not every show is going to be a hit when you don't bring it out. I was going to use the exact same phrasing that you did, Kelly, regarding tonight's episode, that it's a prime example of where he would have been in the way, and it was better to not have him around. But even just regarding the storyline as a whole, we've spent a lot of this post show just gushing about the quality of the storytelling here. So if we think the storytelling is so good, I can't then also agree suffering from a lack of presence from Roman. When Roman does show up, I mean, so much of the Bloodline, I feel, is based on The Godfather. And when you watch The Godfather, Marlon Brando's not in it a lot. But when he shows up, you're like, oh, man, that's Don Corleone. And that's how you feel when you see Roman. And that's a lot better than it would be if we saw him every single week.
And granted, Marlon Brando not showing up a lot is because he couldn't memorize lines. I love, Tom, the photo.
Is it it's James Caan or is it?
It's not James Caan. It's the Consigliere.
Whose name is on the tip of my tongue.
Oh gosh, we should both be embarrassed by this.
Is it Robert Duvall?
Yep, Robert Duvall wearing a suit that is literally the lines that the Don has to speak, and that's what Marlon Brando did. He read lines that were on a sandwich board on the actor opposite him.
And don't get me started on the Isle of Dr. Moreau.
Sometimes it's not pretty, filmmaking, folks. Thank you for all your emails. Tom, I will ask you if there's anything else. Let's run through. Is there anything we didn't miss, didn't get? I don't think there was much here. Xavier Woods beat LA Knight. I think that's going to, I don't know, somewhere semi-interesting for LA Knight, and Xavier Woods gets to be on TV. Kofi ankle surgery, I don't know how serious that is, but it's a bummer that he'll be out. Drew and Sheamus, it's Stranger Things. Rhea and Cena did a Stranger Things video. I don't know that we missed much. This show was intentionally tight and snug and did only a few things, but set out to do them well. And Tom, I think they did.
Yeah, they sure did. I could point out that, and I, which I guess saying that I could, in essence, doing so, that I'm not particularly impressed with the movie and, I guess, streaming show parodies this year. But that's just like spoiled brat Tom talking. I'm just comparing it to the last one that they did, which in real time I didn't like at the time. But when I look back, I'm like, man, they really nailed the look and feel of the scenes that they were evoking, and they did basically shot-for-shot remakes of, like, A Few Good Men and Pulp Fiction and whatnot. So just doing little skits this time that aren't really much of anything is a bit of a letdown, and I think if there are any other talking points, it's just that we got no Bray again and no Bobby Lashley, so the question mark continues to surround that situation, but, you know, I don't think there's anything new to say on it. I think we covered everything that they gave us to cover tonight.
All right, folks, that is St. Patrick's Day 2023 on SmackDown, my 21-year anniversary of dating my wife, so get excited. And if you're not excited about that, be excited about being Irish. And if you're not Irish, just have a drink, folks. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Tom.
I'm Tom Stelp, and if you want to follow me anywhere, you can subscribe to Speedway Video on YouTube. And if you're not sick of listening to us, you can go VIP and listen to us yammer for another 100, or was it 110 minutes? I don't remember. It was long.
101 minutes. Let's okay. Not be crazy. Just 101.
101 minutes tomorrow on, or today if you're listening on delay, on Torch VIP, talking about the first episode of television that, or the first filmed show of any kind that NXT did outside the state of Florida.
Yes, indeed. And it was a good one. Their episode and ours. Their episode, okay. Our episode, fantastic. All right. we will see you soon enough, Will, Tom, and I, because Tom is on most of the podcasts on this site. All right. Cheers, folks. There we go. Wow. Nobody left while we were...
Thank you. You fucking whores.
Thank you.
Oops.